Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servo-Didio, and I am your host. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Tonight on the line, I have Elizabeth Gerald. This is a mom who has a story of loss, of trauma, and suicide. Marcy Gerald first attempted suicide after Roger Denson winked at her in the courtroom. The 15-year-old was so traumatized by seeing the man later convicted of brutally beating and sexually assaulting her in January 2014, she fell into a downward emotional spiral from which she never recovered. Her mother, Elizabeth, said, "Marcy was never the same." "The sexual assault turned her whole world around," Elizabeth Gerald said. "She didn't want to hang around with her friends anymore. She didn't want to go outside to be social. She would scrub herself raw. She began suffering anxiety attacks and, despite counseling, slipped into a depression. The honor roll student at Homewood Flossmoor High School was transferred to a different school. Ultimately, the trauma was too much for her to come. On July 20th, the 15-year-old took her own life by ingesting an overdose of tramadol. Elizabeth, welcome to Insight into Healing, and thank you so much for being here this evening with us.
And thank you for having me.
Yes, my honor and my pleasure.
Yes, and I'm really thankful for you having me, tell my daughter's story on your show.
Yes, yes. So tell us, how did this all begin with Marcy? When did this all come about?
Everything happened in 2014. She was actually coming home from the library. I'm going to kind of go back a little bit. Before the assault, Marcy was an advanced placement honor roll student, which is very high honor roll. She had dreams of going to Harvard Law to become something. She took dance classes. She did volunteer work at the different food pantries and soup kitchens. She did tutoring, a lot of her peers and everything. She just was an amazing young lady. She carried herself with respect. She was a rainbow girl. She was just into a lot of positive stuff. And she was on her way home from tutoring somebody when she was actually sexually assaulted. The guy who assaulted her had just got out of prison, and he was not even supposed to be in my area. I think they have, like, halfway houses or a sexual offender house or something he was supposed to be in, but he was not even supposed to be out here. And, I guess when they get out, a lot of times the parole boards can't keep, count or track of where the guys or, the offenders go. So he was wandering around and happened to see my daughter, and he grabbed her and he put her in like a chokehold and took her, and he beat her pretty bad and he raped her repeatedly. And the rape was so bad till my daughter, she had to actually stay in the hospital for a few days because, her ovaries and her uterus were so swollen and inflamed to the point she couldn't even walk. So she was actually, just really messed up from all that. And what ended up happening was we went to the Laney Foundation, and she spoke with Dr. Matheson, and she even had therapists that came by the house from Grand Prairie Services. So she went out to Laney Foundation and spoke with Dr. Matheson, and she also had therapists that came by the house. And, she would have her good days and she would have her bad days, but she ended up having really bad anxiety attacks. She had a fear of male. She didn't want to go outside, and she didn't really want to hang around her friends anymore. She ended up being put into a therapeutic school for girls called The Mansion in Naperville, Illinois, and she was accepted there because of the fact her grades you have to have really good grades. Even though it's a therapeutic school, they still won't accept you if you're not an honor roll student. And so she was accepted because her grades were, really good. And, there she felt more comfortable because there was a school, a therapeutic school, and she wasn't around teen boys. And, even the teachers were females there. The bus driver was a female, so she was around females. It was just hard for her to leave the house because he had actually threatened her, too, that he would have, the police said he had some kind of connections with some gangster disciples or GDs, whatever you want to call them. And so she was afraid to go outside. She was afraid that they were going to come hurt us because he had told her that he was going to have her, beat up or have us killed or something. And it just really messed her up. She had never been sexually active. She had never been beaten. So it just really traumatized her, and she just kind of spiraled down. She'd still, you know, smile and everything, and, you know, walk around chipper some days, and then some days she would just be kind of down, and I would, you know, like, hey, what do you need me to do, baby? And, you know, she would say, I'm okay, Mom, and, you know, we would just go from there. And it was July 19th she had went out and did some tutoring, and she came home that day. And maybe around a little after midnight is when she came downstairs, because I had been doing laundry all that day, and she laid on the couch with me and gave me a hug and a kiss and said, I love you, Mommy. And I said, I love you too, baby. And she said, can I lay down with you? And I said, yeah. And that was nothing strange, because I tell my son and my daughter every day that I love them, and they tell me that too. And my son is 17, so sometimes he's like, oh, my God, Mom, you're embarrassing me. But we tell each other we love each other every day, so there was nothing different about that. When I woke up the next morning, it was around 6 a.m., I said, Marcy, get up. And I couldn't wake her up, and I said, Marcy, get up. I couldn't, so I sat her up, and I jumped up, and I started screaming, Marcy, wake up, Marcy, wake up. I couldn't wake her up, and I screamed for my son to come downstairs, and I said, please come help me wake her up. There's something wrong with Marcy. You know, never in a million years I would think my child was deceased. My son looked up. He says, Mom, call 911 now. I called 911. And I said, there's something wrong with my daughter. I can't wake her up. The police department and the ambulance were here within maybe 2 to 3 minutes. They got her really quick. They started working on her here. And when the paramedics said, we need to help her get her to the hospital, I just threw on my house shoes and ran out the door behind them. I jumped in the ambulance with them. I believe they called ahead because the doctor and there were nurses already standing outside. When we got there, they took her and they ran, you know, to the back, and the other nurse grabbed me and, you know, took me around through the emergency room and just had me sit by the emergency room doors and said, you know, just sit here and wait, and we'll see what's going on. She went back there, and then a few minutes later, she came back and said, Ms. Drill, the doctor wants you to start calling your family. And I said, well, why? What's going on? What's wrong with my daughter? She says, I don't know. You know, they just want, you know, your family to be here. So I said, well, I don't have a phone or a purse or nothing. So she said, write some numbers down and we'll call. So I gave her my sister and my niece's number. The hospital called them, and she came back and said, your family, you know, they're calling everybody, they'll be on their way. So I said, well, what's going on with Marcy? So she said, well, I'll go get, you know, talk to the doctor and I'll come back and let you know. And then maybe, I would say at least 5 minutes later, her, the doctor, and the third person came. I didn't know it was a chaplain at that time. They just walked in towards me and they said, can we please speak to you? And we went into a private room, and that's when they told me that my daughter was gone. They said there was nothing they could do for her. And, you know, I could hear them, but it's like I was in a twilight zone or something. And I'm like, this cannot be happening. And they said it was, she didn't even have a heartbeat. And, you know, I'm like, well, can I at least see her? And they said, yes. They took me back to where she was. And she was just laying there like she was still sleeping. And it was nothing else they could do. And, you know, the doctor said this is one of the worst, the hardest parts of his job. He said, in fact, this is the part of his job that he hates, is when he has to tell somebody that they lost their child. And since that day, you know, what I've done is I vowed to try to save lives. I started a movement in my daughter's name, and it's the Marcy John A. Gerald Movement. And with the movement, what I do is I'm getting a building. If the children or youth are homeless, because we have a lot of homeless youth, I'm going to put them in the building. If they need therapy, we're going to get them that. We're going to have a mentoring program, help with high school diploma or GED. We're going to be giving college scholarships, teaching how to job training and life skills to try to get them to become productive young men and women. And then I've also been going around spreading suicide awareness and mental illness, because suicide is actually the third leading cause of death. We hear about a lot of homicides, but we rarely hear about suicides, because people, for whatever reason, think it's something we should just sweep under the rug. A lot of people say because of shame or embarrassment or guilt, they don't come out. Since I've been doing this, I have people from all over the world calling me, telling me, you know, stories that they've lost kids, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, neighbors, best friends, uncles, aunties, to suicide, but, you know, they were afraid to come out and say something because of the fact they thought they were going to be blamed or, like I said, the shame or whatever else. I've had people say that they'd rather lie and say it was a natural cause or an accidental death versus suicide. And
it's amazing. I would really I just really would like to commend you for coming out and being able to speak about this. And it's so inspiring through all your pain that you come out with, you have the strength to come forward and do all these incredible things out of all your pain and trauma to help others and to hopefully prevent other parents or family members or loved ones to go through what you have had to go through.
Yes, you know, I know Marcy was such an outgrown young lady. You would know I have to keep her name. I'm not going to let my child's name go in vain. That just was not an option for me to just sweep it under the rug. I want justice. Another one of the things I'm also working with is I'm trying to get a bill passed in her name. I want the person who assaulted her to be charged with her death. I feel like if you cause a person to take their lives, whether it's assault, whether it's bullying, whether it's a taunting, domestic violence, rape, or whatever it is, you should be charged with that person's death. So I'm trying to get a bill passed in her name. And hopefully, you know, we can get this bill passed. And, you know, I don't want that guy to get out, because what will happen is he'll get out and, you know, every day that he's in there, he has enough time to think about what he can do to make it, you know, to really hurt the next child. The next child, he may just end up beating to death and killing so they can't have him locked up, because he's been in and out of prison. And he's not going to get better. He's going to get worse. He really is.
Yeah, his name is Roger Denson. Had a criminal history. Has he had any sexual assault history in the past? He sounds like he's a career criminal.
He is. And what I found out is it ain't even just him. His brother, I don't know his brother's name because I think they have different last names or something, but from what I was told, his brother is also a sexual offender. His brother's in jail right now. His brother likes him, I guess, you know, don't like teenage girls. He likes them younger than what my daughter was. So his brother's in jail for messing around with, I think, for a 6-year-old or a 7-year-old. Was in jail for that. The father has been in jail for sexual assaults. One of his sisters actually lost her kid to the state, DCFS or CPS, whatever you call it in your state, because she was sexually abusing them, and she's been arrested. So I think it's something that runs in their family. It's like, it sounds like the whole family have some kind of thing going on with beating and sexually assaulting people.
Yes, yes. How many years did he get? What was he sentenced for?
I think he took a plea deal for like 8.5 years. And for parole, I think they're going to give him a life parole, which means if he gets out and does anything else, he'll end up getting life, because of the simple fact is he is a career criminal. But I don't even want him to get out. The thing is, the state's attorney and them say, well, they already know he's going to mess up as soon as he get out. But my thing is this, if they know he's going to mess up when he gets out, then why let him out? Because the next child he gets, he's going to, I do believe he's going to kill him, because, I mean, why would he just beat him and let him live to testify against him? It's going to be worse.
Yes, and he knows this might be the last child he can sexually molest or assault. So, and obviously their anger and their attacks get greater and greater throughout their lives. And did he say, what was his justification, or did he say he didn't do it? Did he ever admit that he did this?
No, he admitted to doing it. That's why he was able to take the plea. He didn't deny it or nothing. He told them that he did it. He did admit to sexually assaulting her. The thing is, he acts like he tells this sad story that he was molested, he was beaten, he was, he went through a lot of stuff as a child. So he's telling all these sob stories, you know, he went through this, he went through that. So he's making it seem like he just can't help himself, like he really don't mean to. He just seen my daughter and, you know, he was like, she's just so gorgeous, she was so pretty, and he just couldn't help himself. You know, she was just so beautiful and this, that, and the other, and he just honestly couldn't help himself. So, and he just tells this sob story of what he went through as a child. He's been in and out of DCFS. He was taken from his parents because he was sexually abused. So he's been in and out the foster system I think they said since 94, he's been to different foster homes, and he's been through all this stuff. So, you know, that's what his reasons for doing it is because he had such a horrible childhood.
Which is not an excuse. A lot of people have horrible childhoods and get help and work
right.
on themselves.
Exactly. Right.
And come out. How did your daughter handle this? I mean, to go through this case and the trial, how did she handle all of this?
You know, after the first time we went to court, I guess he had turned around. I seen him look, but I looked at her. Either he mean mugged her or he winked at her or did something. And she ran out the courtroom. And, you know, we ended up getting an advocate to go to court for us because she couldn't handle that. And that's the first time she actually attempted suicide because I guess she felt like it was a joke to him, like it was funny, like, oh, well, whatever, I'm just going back to jail. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, he had just really got out of jail, so he didn't care.
Now, going to jail for him isn't a big deal.
Right.
Well, and how, when she got home after that, did you start to notice different warning signs, or was she withdrawing? What was it like for her and for you and the family?
When we got home that day, she was just, like, having anxiety attacks. She couldn't breathe. I had to calm her down. You know, I just held her. And I said, well, we won't have to go back there. And you know, I called. I actually called.
Can you hear me? Hello? Hello? Are you there? I think we might have lost her. Hold on.
She drank some bleach.
Yes.
And
okay.
My son happened to see her because she was laying on the floor, and my son started screaming, "Mom, call 911, call 911. I said, "What's wrong?" He said, "Just call 911 now." And I did, and then I ran upstairs, and my daughter was, you know, on the floor then because she had just drunk some bleach.
Wow. So this was a girl who had a life, who had no, you know, issues before this, was happy, was living life, and then this
yes.
horrific event happened and
mm-hmm.
traumatized, and just this downward spiral began.
Yes, it did. The day he raped her, he took her soul from her. I mean, you know, like I said, she had so much going for her. She wanted to go to Harvard Law. She was smart. She just had a lot going for her, a whole lot.
Yes, yes. And what was it like for the family? Because I think that's also such a different layer to look at with those that are at home with this. And how did you heal with this? Because I know you have to be strong for your daughter. How was it for you as a mother to go through all of this?
You know, it was hard for me because, you know, my thing was, you know, I think if I could have got hold of him, I think I'd have killed him. I just, you know, it was hard for me because, like I said, I just kept thinking of ways, I wish I knew somebody that had him killed. And, you know, I wouldn't say that in front of her, but when I see her hurting and going through that, and I just wanted to wring his neck, and, you know, it was just hard and heartbreaking for me. And, you know, I couldn't break down and cry in front of her, so I would do laundry or, you know, go to Walmart or do something to try to keep my strength up. And my son, he just became very angry, and he felt like, you know, why wasn't I there? Why she didn't call me? And this wouldn't happen, and that wouldn't happen. And he, you know, let me at him. And, you know, he blamed himself because he felt like, you know, maybe if she'd have called him, he'd have came and got her. Or, you know, I don't know, he just wished he'd have been there the same as me. And, you know, it was just hard. And Lord knows, I think yeah. if I'd have got the guy, I think I'd have been in jail for killing him.
I know. A lot of parents would have definitely feel the same way, a lot of people. And I think that's what it is. It's feeling so helpless, and that's why I think it's so amazing what you're doing, is that you're taking your pain and being able to, and that feeling of being helpless and moving forward and trying to get this bill passed, which I think is so reasonable and should be passed, that if you do have
yeah.
something to do with the reason why someone commits suicide or attempts suicide, you definitely should be charged with something.
Oh, yeah, and the thing is, we have a lot of people committing suicide because of assault, because of bullying and taunting and, you know, and different things. And, you know, like I was saying earlier, I was watching the ID channel, and I was seeing mm-hmm. where Tamron Hall was on, and it's one of her episodes when the guy is in, it's an older guy in Minnesota, and he's on the line with a girl from, I think, Canada. And, you know, he managed to trick her to thinking he's a 15-year-old girl, and they're supposed to be, I guess they, I'm not sure if it was a suicide group they were in or whatever, but he managed to do a suicide pact with her. She commits suicide, and he don't. When the police goes knocking on his door thinking it's a, you know, to let the parents know that their 15-year-old daughter might be contemplating suicide, they find out it's him. And the only thing he was charged with, it was some kind of internet crime. And he didn't even do a year because there is no law in place. And that family wants justice. They had to bury their child because this 60-some-year-old man gets off on being online, getting kids to commit suicide. And only God knows if that was his first child, you know, person that he had do this to. It could be a lot of kids that he didn't manage to, you know, have them commit suicide. We don't know.
Yes,
he
yes.
can be doing it now because he can do.
Yes, with the internet and with all of that, there's no, you know, since it's so new with all the social media, there needs to be laws, or there's something has
right.
to be done, because I think it's happening so quickly, people don't know what to do, and lawmakers and courts don't know how to charge people. But, I mean, just as an internet crime, it's pretty, I mean, he's pretty manipulative and
right.
planned this, that he knew what she would probably end up doing.
Right. I think he did 6 months, and, you know, I don't even know if he had to do the whole 6 months because, you know, like I said, they didn't have anything else to charge him with because there's nothing in place. And nobody has really been trying to get anything in place. I guess nobody figured it was important enough or nothing. I'm not sure.
I think it's such a hard thing. I think it's also such a painful struggle to do this. How are you moving forward with this? Have you contacted lawmakers? What are your next steps?
You know, I've actually been talking with my state senators and a lot of judges, and they actually agree with me, and you know, they're willing to work with me. I actually had a person that said they would rather try to make it, if we can, make it a federal law, so versus a state, you know, and if we can make it a federal law, even the man who, you know, who caused that little girl in Canada to commit suicide, he would at least be charged too, because it's going on, you know, it's stuff is happening everywhere, not just here.
Yes, yes. And I think, and it's ongoing. These people don't just do it once, unfortunately. This is, I mean, they just keep doing it and doing it and doing it, and it's just, it's so manipulative. And I'm wondering why there hasn't been a law in place before this, that if someone is the cause or the reason of why someone takes their own life or hurts themselves, it would only make sense that this would be,
yeah.
that there would be a law against it.
I think because a lot of people don't like to talk about the suicide or anything because of the embarrassment. So I think most people don't even try to push that issue because they don't want to come out and tell their stories. And that's the biggest problem is a lot of people don't want to tell their stories because of the shame and the guilt. And, you know, like I said, more and more people are coming out now because they see I was able to do it, which Lord knows I'm so happy about that because that's helping me. But I think that's part of the reason a lot of people just wasn't willing to come out and pursue something like this.
Yes, yes. How has it been for you coming out? How do you keep yourself going? Because it must be hard for you to keep telling your story, your daughter's story. How do you deal with it?
You know what? I think I have her energy and her spirit, and, you know, I really want justice, and I, you know, I can't let her name go in vain. My daughter was just such an awesome young lady, and, you know, I know some people can just brush it under, but I just can't let her name go in vain. And you know, I need her name to go on to mean something, to be, you know, save lives and to get this bill passed. And I think that's what keeps me motivated, knowing that I'm doing something positive. I turn my tragedy into a triumph. And you know, God willing, I believe this bill will be passed, and I believe my movement will be successful. And I do believe I'll be able to save lives and stuff. I really do.
Yes, yes, I agree. What can us and what can my listeners do who are in different states and different countries? How can they help in this?
One of the things they can do is go on Facebook and like and share the movement page, because everything I do is I put on that page, and that'll help me get it out there, because, you know, and once they see that, and, you know, also if they can donate, because I do have a lawyer that's helping me get this bill passed and everything, to help pay it, and that's the biggest thing is to get my page and get my name out there. Let other people know, let other lawmakers know, hey, we're trying to get a bill passed in Marcy Gerald's name. If they know anybody else, you know, that's you know, that can help. You know, I don't know, you might know a lawyer, a judge, a politician, whoever it is. Let them know we're trying to get this bill passed and it's something that's important. Let them know that, you know, what I'm doing, and just help me get my daughter's name out there. The more exposure I get, the better of a chance I get, and the more people I have behind me helping me is what's going to get it. Because then they'll start saying, well, people are actually serious. She's serious. It's not like I'm just doing this right now. And then, you know what I'm saying? And
yes.
It's going to take, you know, they say it takes a village, and it's going to take a village and then some. But the more people I have behind me, the more power I get behind me, the more exposure, it's what it's going to take to get this bill passed.
Yes, yes. I think it's a lot of people writing petitions, writing letters, contacting their
yes.
state representatives,
yes.
and really demanding that these laws be changed, and that there needs to be some
oh, yeah.
new laws and really different ways of looking at this. And I think, you know, with all the bullying going on, with all the suicide, I mean, you can't unfortunately watch the news without hearing some horrific tragedy of someone taking their life from bullying,
yes.
from an assault. And I think it's just become more of a widespread epidemic. We can't ignore it.
Yes, we can. And it'll help. And the thing is, once people know that they're going to have to be charged for what they're doing, a lot of that will cut down, too, because a lot of people don't want to go to jail, but a lot of people are just not taking it seriously when they tell somebody, like, I know, I hear a lot of people, you know, say, now, go kill yourself. You know, you don't realize, you
mm-hmm.
don't know what's on that person's mind. You don't know if they're at that state that they are ready to go kill themselves, and you're telling somebody, oh, go kill yourself. And that's really big with the youth now. They get mad, and the first thing they say is, go kill yourself, you know? That's got
yes.
to stop.
Yes, yes.
People
got to
start
really
being held accountable
for
what they do. Oh,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, yes. And I think also taking the stigma. And people don't want to talk about it, or, you know, they're with the guilt and the shame. I think that really needs, there should not be any stigma. There should not be any guilt or shame. And I think it's really giving strength to the victims that are,
right.
are trying to go to court or trying, you know, to do these, that have the strength to do this too, to be there to for other people to show up and just be there to support that different networks or groups that can help them. So if they
right.
are feeling in pain,
oh,
need,
yeah.
at least, you know, to have this team behind you, which I think the family, the victim, everybody needs that team to keep moving forward.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And this
definitely.
Will help rape victims too.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Because I think
a lot
half
of them
the
don't
battle,
come out.
Too. Yes.
Huh?
A lot. I work in a private practice, and I, you know, see, unfortunately, a lot of clients who are victims of sexual assault, rape, domestic
okay.
violence. And what they say is going to court and actually trying to get it convicted is almost as bad as the actual assault. They are
right.
dragged through. Their name is dragged through. They're just demoralized, while that person who attack them and sits in the room and usually does have that smirk on their face or
exactly.
is, you know, knows that they have to prove that they did do it, this, you know, that they have to do this, and it's so hard
oh, yeah.
on the victim because her pair life is just thrown all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot
That's
of times
terrible.
People don't have the strength to get
right,
up
and
really stand
anything.
Up against somebody. Yeah.
Right, and they don't say anything. Because
yeah.
there's a lot of rape victims that have not told anybody that they were actually sexually assaulted. So you have a lot of rapists just walking around, too, that's not going to jail. And they're, you know, doing it over and over again, too.
Yes. When is this Roger Denson supposed to be getting out?
8.5 years. I think in maybe 1919 or 1920. Somewhere up in there.
Okay. And would he get out any earlier? They're saying probably by 2019, 2020 is the earliest.
It should be. I think he has to
out.
Do 85%.
Okay.
He does have to do 85% of the because of the fact he's a repeat offender, but he should have got more time. If he would, the thing is, I guess because he didn't really fight it and he just played out, hey, I did it. They just went on and, you know, hey, just give him 8, you know, just to get it over with.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, he's been in jail so many times, so he knows the law, and he knows, hey, you know.
Yes.
He knows
and
that. He knows,
that
hey, they offer me a plea, I'll
death.
Just take it.
Yes, and I think now that since the suicide, he should, I mean, I would think that they would have to have another charge against him since his acts did lead to her death. I mean, I would think that, and also because he is a repeat offender, that this is, you know, it just keeps adding up and adding up.
Yeah. Yeah. And they already know it, though, and that's the thing about it. That's why they gave him that life parole, because they figured, well, he'll get out of here and mess up, but, I mean, it don't mean anything to him, you know what I'm saying? He should have been had a life parole.
Yes.
So,
and
I
think it's why just, why they know he's that he will mess up. It's almost, it's kind of backwards that, you know, why take somebody else's chance, some other child, some other person's chance of their life, of their healthy mental health, could be taken away from them just to let this guy out within, you know, eight and a half years.
The state attorney said that they always do. He said that, you know, they already know. He said these guys always mess up. They always get out. And, you know, even if he don't, like, when he gets out, I think he has 3 days to even check into the police department and to the parole department. Even if he don't do that, he'll that right there is a violation. He'll go right back. But the thing about it, you know, they say they always mess up. Even if he don't, you know, check in, that's it. He'll go right back. But the thing is, why would you give him that chance? You know, what if he meets somebody while he's in jail and, hey, you know, get out and decide not to check in and go stay with somebody that they don't know about, and then he's just out in the open, and he, you know what I'm saying? The same way he was out here, he was not supposed to be out here. We don't know who he's chatting with. You have a lot of pen pal groups that are up, and you know, you have a lot of women and different people that are actually joining these prison pen pals and meeting these inmates, and, you know, hey, you can come stay with me. And the thing is, a lot of these women don't realize that these guys will tell them anything they want to hear just so they can, you know, have somewhere to go or use them and for to keep money on their books or whatever. And I have no way of knowing if he's on a pen pal list or not, because there's so many of them out there. So if he gets out and he has somewhere else to go, he may not, you know, sign in and say, hey, I'm at the halfway house or wherever he's supposed to be. He may just get out and go and just leave. And start it up again. That's why I really don't want him out, because I just know he's going to be worse at this time.
Yes. And I think he knows, too, once he gets out, it's only a matter of time before he does something wrong. So I think it also ups the ante for him for his next crime.
Right. Right.
The stakes,
you know,
are high.
He may get out and decide, hey, well, I want more than one this time. He may get out and, you know, just attack everybody who he can.
Has he had any contact with you, or is he not contacting you at all, or did he ever do that?
No, he hasn't contacted me at all.
Okay.
Yeah, so far he hasn't.
Yes. How has your daughter's friends, how have they been through all this? Because this must have been, you know, it's kind of impacted the whole community.
You know, and that's one thing I'm glad about the community I live, because they all support me 100%, but my daughter's friends, you know, when my daughter died, they took it so hard because she was so well-loved. I mean, even the mayor reached out and said, do not let her name go in vain. Her doctor took off work to come to her funeral because, you know, she was such an amazing person. And her friends are, you know, they were just, and they still are really messed up over this whole thing. You know, her parents, you know, hey, it's been when it's 3 months she had been gone. You know, one of her best friend's mom said, I had just told my husband, you know, it's going on 90 days. She's been gone, and it's going on this many days. And, you know, they're keeping up with it. They take flowers to the cemetery, and, you know, I go to the cemetery and to take her flowers, and then sometimes there are already other flowers up there from where her friends and or their families then came up there and took stuff, you know, to put on her grave.
Yes. I think out of at least one comforting thing out of all of this is you really see how the community and people really pull together, and it sounds like they're very,
yeah,
really supportive and there for you, which I think is so beautiful.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, that helps me out a lot, too, you know, is the support I get from them.
So now you are working with other teenagers, adolescents, people who have had different similar traumas or different hardships. How is that, mm-hmm, for you?
I used to do foster care, so it's kind of almost similar to the same thing. When I was doing foster care, I had met a kid. His name was Javante Hampton, and he had told me that once he got a certain age, he was going to try to be killed by either some gangs or the police. And I said, "Well, why would you do that?" He said, "Because he didn't want to bring shame to his family." And I said, "Are you serious?" And I did let his caseworker know, and I let, different people from DCFS, the agency that he was from, know. And the thing is, once they're 18, they still, hey, it is what it is. If he, you know, and, you know, we had a case here where it was a kid named Laquan, I think McDaniel, that was shot in Chicago, and he was shot down by some police, and they started protesting because of that. And the first thing came to my mind is this boy has been in and out of foster home. He's been molested. It could be that he wanted to just commit suicide and you know, was launched at the police with a knife because he wanted them to kill him. And, you know, so, you know, I know a lot of people was angry with the police department, about what happened, but I sometimes wonder if he was in that state that he was just ready to die and didn't want to do it himself, and he just would rather be shot by the police or a gang. And a lot of people don't understand that. But when you're working with youth, you got a lot of them that are homeless because they get out the system. And, you know, you got some that go to college and become productive, but you got some that are in a lot of pain because they went through stuff at home with their families. And then they turn around and go through stuff in the streets. They went through stuff going from different foster homes. And so they're on the streets and they have a lot of inner pain. And, you know, they don't really have the counseling or the education that they need. So that's where I step in. I know I can't save each and every one of them because I may not get them, but as many of them as I can get that I know that needs help, if they need therapy or counseling, I'm going to make it my job to get them that. Or if they want a, you know, high school diploma or GED, or if we have to get them the scholarship for college, or if they need job training or life skills or whatever they need, is what, you know, I'm going to make it my, you know, priority to do to help them become productive young men, and to show them, hey, there is light at the end of the tunnel. We can't just give up and say, well, you know, I went through this, my parents didn't love me. You know, let them know that they are loved, and let them know that they are somebody. And I think that would help. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yes. Yes, I definitely think it helps. I think you brought up such an interesting point with the suicide. Is there's different ways of people trying to attempt suicide. But, and I think,
and
that's what really needs to shed light on. The awareness of that people try to kill themselves passively or aggressively.
Yeah, and when I seen that boy, they, you know, and everybody was upset with the police, like, you know, he didn't have to do this, he didn't have to do that. You know, the first thing that came to my mind is, you know, he's lunging at the police with the knives and he's running, and he did run, but I believe he probably, deep inside, was ready to go because, you know, he didn't drop the knife and hold his hands up. He really didn't. And, you know, I think about what Javante said, and I've had other, you know, foster kids that feel that same way, that they don't want to embarrass their family or bring shame to their family by taking their own life, so they'd rather somebody else take it for them.
Yes.
And a lot of people don't think like that, but a lot of kids do.
And I think also when there's been a long history or any type of history of sexual abuse, physical abuse, trauma, that is a topic, that is a subject that definitely has to be explored and processed, because I think that's what happens. Almost that hope and that excitement of living and having a life has been taken away. And I think this even, you know, enforces and supports your bill to be passed even more, because they've taken, even if the person gets therapy and has, you know, can get to some quality of living, that attack really takes away their soul. It takes away a hope for them in the future.
Oh, yeah.
And it takes that, you know, yes, they can still live, move forward, but it takes a part of their life that they can never sometimes get back. It's a pain and a trauma that stays with them, that person really, you know, there has to be a stricter punishment for that.
Right. Oh, right. You're right.
I mean, it's just, you know, and I think when someone is suicidal, or if any of the listeners feel that, you know, they might have an idea that their friend or family member or themselves feels that way, it's really making sure they seek help and find a team, because this is something definitely not for them to have to process on their own, and there should not be any shame or guilt surrounding it.
Right. But a lot of people just, you know, I don't know why, I guess when it's suicide and sexual assault, a lot of people just, you know, got to sweep it under the rug. It's, you know, I don't understand this.
Yes.
You know, it's sad, but yeah. And when I tell you, I've had people, you know, going, my Facebook page, my movement page, and my, you know, my personal page, Elizabeth Gerald, tell me their stories. And I even have a lady that I met from Greece, and, you know, she was asking me, would I consider coming to Greece to just do like a, you know, talk to her students and stuff, because there's a lot of that going on out there. bullying and taunting, and she, you know, in about sexual assault. I've had, you know, people from the organization called Jack and Jill, and you know, tell me that you know that they have teen girls that, you know, they were considered me talking to and everything.
Yes.
So.
Yes. And I think it's so important to, you know, spread the awareness and also for the support. And I think it is, you know, your daughter living on and her story, and also the sign of her strength and her power really comes through.
Yes. Yes.
It's really amazing. How was it? Did your daughter had therapy and sought counseling? How was that for her?
You know, we went to Dr. Matheson, and like I said, she was fast some days, and at one time I thought she was actually coming around, and you know, I guess with the court and stuff, that kind of brought her back. And then when we stopped going to court, she seemed to be hanging in there and you know, doing good and everything. But what ended up happening was she also, one of her other friends, I'm not sure what they were going through or nothing, actually committed suicide, and that's what pushed her back, like, oh, my God, here we go again. And that just messed her up to the point, you know, and you know, I guess I think she blamed herself because, you know, she couldn't stop that person. I don't even think she realized that person was going to commit suicide or nothing, and I think that's what brought the anxiety and a lot of that stuff on. It brought it back.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, it's you know, she's so traumatized as it is, and then to have something like that, I mean, how does an adult process that, but how does a 15-year-old child process that who has been, you know, sexually attacked and assaulted like that, to be able to even, you know, absorb or even carry anything else?
Right. So, that was just the straw that broke the camel's back, was the other suicide.
Yes. What would you say to someone now if they were listening to the show and they were feeling overwhelmed or that maybe suicide would be an option? What would you say to them?
Well, I would tell them that, you know, that they are loved, and to please seek help. Don't be embarrassed. Don't be ashamed. There's nothing to be ashamed or embarrassed about. Everybody has a story. Me, you, everybody on this planet has a story. We just don't know that person's story. So they should know that they're not the only ones that have a story. They're not the only ones that's hurting or going through whatever it is they're going through. And in order to get better, they got to seek some kind of help to, you know, talk to somebody, whether it's a friend or relative. Even if they have to reach me on Facebook, like I said, my name is Elizabeth Gerald, I would even, you know, go out and do what I could to help them. To talk, or if you need a listening ear or whatever it is, if you need resources, you know, to try to help you, you know, I would even, you know, do that. But they need to, you know, talk to somebody or something.
Yes. So it sounds like you really see yourself going on a speaking tour. Is that something that's really coming up for you?
You know what, I'm considering it. I haven't said yes or no yet, but I think that would be a good thing for me to do, because I do have a lot of people reaching out to me asking me to come to their different areas and speak.
Yes.
So.
And would you ever have thought of that this would be such a powerful story that people would be asking you to come tell your story?
You know what, when I first decided to come and tell my daughter's story, I figured it wouldn't even go nowhere, because I figured people would be like, you know, because suicide, like I said, is not talked about. People would just be negative, like, well, that's what she got, you know, because you do have some people that are really cruel. I thought it was going to be negativity and nobody would care. I had no way in the world of knowing I would have so many people reaching out to me and so many people actually caring, telling me their stories and everything. I never knew suicide was a third leading cause of death. I never, you know, knew so many people were going through things, and that's why I say everybody has a story. We just don't know that person's story, and that's why I tell people to let's learn to love and be kind to one another, because you just don't know what's going on with that person. You don't know what's in that person's head or that person's mind. And sometimes you can say the wrong thing and it might just, you know, push them over the edge.
Yes. Yes, I think it's really important to make sure people take responsibility of how they speak to people and their actions. And I think that everybody has an impact, and it's very important to make sure you really watch how you interact with people. And I think, and before judging anything or making an assumption, that each person
right.
is so different and each case is so different, not to be so judgmental or constructive criticism, because I find that really
right.
doesn't, isn't that really helpful?
Right. And that's what it is. And, you know, we got to start showing love and kindness towards one another. We really do. Because you got some people that are just so mean and cruel, and, you know, and it makes no sense.
No. No, it doesn't. So where would you see yourself five years from now? Where do you see yourself?
In 5 years from now, I'm praying that the bill is passed, and I'm praying that, you know, I'm saving lives and my movement is just up and rolling, and I'm helping hundreds and maybe thousands of youth and even adults, you know what I'm saying? Because, like I said, everybody has a story. You know, I want to be... You know, I want my daughter to be the face of America. I want her to be the face, you know, that everybody knows of love and kindness and saving lives and everything. And, you know, and if everything goes right, I will be. You know, my movement will be up, and, you know, I'll be known all around the world, and I'll be, you know, doing a lot of positive things.
Yes, yes. And, again, what are all the websites and links where people can contact you, can if they want for your GoFundMe page and all of that?
Well, Facebook is I don't know how to do a lot of them different social media things. So Facebook,
mm-hmm.
basically, my name is Elizabeth Gerald, G-E-R-A-L-D, and it's a picture of Marcy as my profile. The movement is the Marcy, which is M-A-R-C-I-E, J-O-N-E-A, G-E-R-A-L-D movement. So it's Marcy John A. Gerald Movement. The GoFundMe is actually on my page and on the movement.
Wow.
And you can actually Google Marcy John A. Gerald Movement. I think it'll come up.
Yes. And are you also looking to kind of team up with different types of, you know, associations or different groups with suicide prevention? Because I would think that would also be an amazing teamwork
yes.
to have, you know, again, walks in your daughter's name, fundraisers,
yes.
all types
mm-hmm.
of events where I think could be done all over in honor of your daughter.
Yes, I do plan on doing that. I'm hoping, like, Jack and Jill of America, I don't think they're specifically suicide, but I know they're a youth organization that might, you know, and I'm hoping maybe these talks and this, you know, every time I get on a radio show or something, I hope, you know, I'm hoping that maybe some of these different agencies will reach out to me and say, hey, let's partner up and, you know, let's do this and let's do that.
Yes, yes. Did your daughter do any interviews about what had happened or any events in that before?
She didn't. She did it. You know what, though, before she was raped, she had did an interview with NBC to help. They were doing a... I guess trying to do, like, some kind of show or blog or something for teens. I think it was going to be called maybe the something forum, women's forum, something with teen girls.
Mm-hmm.
And she had interviewed for that, and they were saying she was perfect for the job, and she never, after this, she's when she got sexually assaulted, so she didn't even want to do that anymore.
Wow. Wow. I'm wondering, almost reaching out to them and getting them involved. I mean, this is definitely... That's a story that everyone needs to get involved in.
Yes. Well, I didn't even think about reaching out to them. Yeah, but I will. Her story has been in the Jet magazine. It's been on several news channels, several newspapers. A lot of people have done stories, you know, on my daughter.
Yes. I mean, it's just such a heartbreaking story, but I think such an inspiring story. From what you're doing, I know when you definitely contacted me, I said immediately, I definitely need to have you on my show. And I know when I was advertising for this show, I got a lot of feedback of people really supportive and really wanting to be a part of this movement.
Okay. Great.
It's incredible.
Well, they
can reach me
on Facebook if they would like. I'm Elizabeth Drill, like I said, or reach me on the movement if they're interested, you know.
Yes. And please, I think, you know, definitely keep us all updated with any updates that are moving forward, any events. And I think also if there's anything you need people to write in or contact any further, I can definitely share it on your page and then also share it with my page so we can get people writing in, calling in, and signing petitions to help get this bill passed.
Great. Thank you so much.
Right. And I just wanted to tell you before the show ended again, I mean, how I wanted to commend you for all the hard work you're doing and your story, and that you're just such an inspiration and also giving back to the community. It's very commendable.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, and I appreciate you having me on your show.
You're welcome. And again, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in this evening. You can also reach me on insightintohealing@gmail.com for any questions, or on Facebook at facebook.com/insightintohealing. Again, thank you so much for tuning in. Have a good night, and God bless.
Thank you. Bye-bye.